This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
With the editor-in-chief of Raw Story, Dave Leventhal. Dave, good morning.
And a good morning to you and to, you know, Bandit Land as well.
You took the first question right out of my mouth. I was going to say, last night, another banner will be going up at the KeyBank Center. It's exciting. Exciting for one of our teams knows how to win championships.
And you know, good on them, good on the whole city. It's really great to see a team that was founded when I was still a kid in Buffalo and was winning championships then, winning championships 30-odd years later. It definitely warms even the coldest Buffalonian hearts out there. So congratulations to everyone.
And next season, while the Bandits are raising a banner, the Jumbotron's going down. Last night was the last sporting event at the arena with the current Jumbotron, so something else to look forward to.
And you know, at least it didn't fall to the ground like its predecessor, you know, many, many odd years ago.
Yes, yes. A picture that I still remember when that happened, and a few years later, going to a concert where we had floor seats and being concerned that the Jumbotron was going to fall again.
And a reasonable concern that was.
Yes, yes. Luckily, it never did, and we've had now great Jumbotrons and the third Jumbotron for the arena coming in October of 24. Dave, we have a lot to look forward to before October of 24. And this week, we added two important dates to the calendar. The presidential debates, like we haven't seen them for some time. How did this all come together?
So I thought you were going to talk about the Buffalo Bills schedule, but sure, we can go in the direction of presidential debates. I mean, this has been just a whirlwind of activity and a very unexpected one, because let's just step back for a second. Presidential debates, at least general election presidential debates, have been run for decades now by a commission, and it's a nonpartisan commission. It has Republicans and Democrats on it. It is there to basically serve as a neutral arbiter for how these things go down. They have tried and true, one might say, staid rules and regulations for exactly where they're going to be, who's going to moderate them, how many, what the situation is going to be. And that all seems to be going out the window right now. This Commission on Presidential Debates still exists. The leadership has said they're still going to try to have their own slate of debates. But you know, Donald Trump and Joe Biden, they pretty much made this happen between themselves. Donald Trump, he was very clear. He basically said, and I paraphrase, I'll debate anytime, anywhere, any place. And Joe Biden basically took him up on his offer. So it came together very quickly. CNN was very much a part of the negotiations, to say the least. And in essence, it was just really two candidates who were quite willing and quite motivated to get on the stage together and do so in a different setting than we're normally accustomed to. This is going to be a debate in a TV studio. This is going to be a debate without an audience. And likely it's going to be a debate just between the two of them, mano a mano, again, without that audience. And I think a big question here, too, is will there be a third participant in the form of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as an independent on the stage? That still remains to be seen and has not been determined yet based on the criteria that CNN has set up and that Joe Biden and Donald Trump have agreed to.
Yeah, CNN getting the first debate on June 27th, you know, it seems like the Biden campaign set the rules. And, you know, since former President Trump has been saying, hey, I'm going to debate whenever, wherever, he kind of had to say yes, regardless of what the rules are. Am I missing something there?
You're not. And he basically did, or it would have been seen as him just completely going back on his very, very strong and stated desire. So it's possible that Donald Trump didn't think that Joe Biden was going to take the bait, and Joe Biden very much did or wanted to, but it's very clear that Joe Biden wanted to debate Donald Trump in that kind of a situation. Donald Trump seems to think that he can just wipe the floor with Joe Biden, and that under any circumstance, particularly this kind, that he's going to do great and that he's going to win the debate and that he's going to embarrass Joe Biden and that he's going to reveal Joe Biden as a old man who can't put his words together and is unable to debate Donald Trump on fair footing, and et cetera. So that, of course, remains to be seen, too. But nevertheless, what we have is going to be really unprecedented in modern presidential history, in the sense that we're going to not only have a debate that is outside the realm of the Commission on Presidential Debates, but also, too, it's going to happen before either Donald Trump or Joe Biden are the official presidential nominees of their respected parties. That hasn't happened either. Yes, we've had tons of presidential debates during primary seasons, intramural affairs with the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, but this is something that just really stands apart, going back to, you know, the days of the 60s and the 70s, you know, when television debates became a thing in 1960. It's really just something that we're going to have to get used to very quickly, because it is that different than what we've come to expect in these many, many, many years and presidential election cycles leading up to this one.
You mentioned, you know, how early this first debate is going to be. Is that strategic on one of the campaigns, both the campaigns, and does the date help any candidate in specific?
It's hard to say, and I think back to any of the past go-arounds, whether it was the 2020 election cycle, which, of course, was bizarre because of the situation with COVID-19, or 2016 when Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton went at it. And, you know, sometimes you wonder, are these debates, do they really make that much of a difference at all? The poll numbers may go up a little bit one way or another and in favor of a candidate in the moment, but I think a real question here is anyone going to remember in October what happened at this debate in June? I don't know. We'll see. That's why you have the debate. We'll see what happens. It definitely could set the stage, though, I think, for what happens next. And what's going to happen next in earnest in July will be the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. And Donald Trump is going to have a whole week where he can have, you know, Make America Great Again Fest, and will, in that situation, with everything being nationally televised and people tuning in perhaps record numbers for a convention. And then the month after that, Joe Biden's going to be in Chicago with the Democratic National Convention. Same deal, rinse and repeat. One thing I would note, Joe, about these debates is we've often become accustomed to the debates being televised everywhere, every network channel, every cable channel, PBS, the whole deal. Everyone would air these debates, so they were very accessible. This is going to be different this time around, because CNN is going to, you know, basically have a monopoly on it, and you're not going to have that same sort of blanket coverage. And it is a cable network. There will be streaming options, so there is that. But it may be a debate that gets less watched because of that kind of an issue, even around the margins, and that'll be something to pay attention to see if that has an effect. I should also note that ABC is scheduled to have a debate in September as well, and that Joe Biden and Donald Trump have agreed to that. So at least two debates, if these things don't fall apart, which not 100% chance that we'll get to the finish line on both of these, with both candidates still staying in and one or both not pulling out. So nothing is done until they're physically right there on the debate stage going at it with each other.
And Dave, you know, I have to throw this plug out there. CNN is available, the audio of CNN, on the Odyssey app. So if you don't have CNN, you can always listen to it on the Odyssey app. Just making sure everyone knows how they can find it.
If you don't want to watch the spectacle, maybe just listen to it. Save yourself the trouble.
Now, you know, I've heard people in, you know, I wouldn't say in Joe Biden's camp, but Democrats who say, you know, maybe a debate's not the best thing for the current president. And we did hear early on where Joe Biden was saying, you know, maybe I'll debate if he's on good behavior. I think he said something like that. Where do you think it changed for the Biden campaign? Or do you think there was never really a chance that he wouldn't at least debate the former president once?
Joe Biden can't afford not to debate. And here's why. First of all, his poll numbers not nationally we're talking here, but we're talking specifically in swing states, are absolutely not where he wants them to be right now. And he realizes that Donald Trump isn't just a threat to Joe Biden winning a second term, but that Donald Trump, and put aside all the legal troubles, and I'm sure we'll talk about that in a moment, but that Donald Trump right now is beating Joe Biden in this moment, in the snapshot in time that these polls provide, in places like Wisconsin and Pennsylvania, even Michigan, Georgia, other swing states where it very well could be tens of thousands or even thousands of individual votes that provide the difference between one candidate winning and another candidate losing. So as a result, Joe Biden, on his best day, he's a great debater, and he can really do well. On his worst day, Donald Trump is going to beat him up really good. So you never know really what Joe Biden is going to show up to a debate like that, in a situation like that. Of course, we've had questions now for years about whether Joe Biden is fully fit to serve as president and whether Joe Biden has the mental flexibility and latitude in his game to really stand on a stage with Donald Trump and debate him. I think the debates that we had in 2020 were largely inconclusive. There were only two of them instead of three of them. You had the drama of Donald Trump maybe having COVID when he was on the stage with Joe Biden at one point. So there was a whole circus that were around them. And you may recall or not that first debate was just a shouting match. It was difficult to discern almost anything from either candidate, and it really devolved into just kind of a mud fight as opposed to anything of substance. So that's a question, too, as to whether this kind of debate is going to be similar or whether the candidates are actually going to talk about issues and their vision for the country and why they believe that their route and philosophy and agenda is the one that should win the day this year and also win the day for the next many days over the course of 4 years of a second term for either of the two candidates.
Yeah, it is interesting when you say that. We have two individuals running for a second term. First time in my lifetime, Dave.
Well, for first time in most of our lifetimes, yeah. Too. I mean, there are a few historical examples of where presidents who served as president and then were no longer president because they either lost or they stepped away, tried it again. You can think of Teddy Roosevelt, Herbert Hoover, Grover Cleveland, Buffalo's own is somebody who is the ultimate standard bearer of this type of thing, in the sense that he became president, he lost the presidency, and then he ran again and won a second non-consecutive term. The only president to do that, Donald Trump, would be the second were he to pull off that feat. But the fact of the matter is, presidents who try that don't do well, typically, Grover Cleveland being the outlier. And there are other examples throughout history, and it didn't work out so well. You know, talk to the ghost of Martin Van Buren someday. It just usually isn't going to be something that is advantageous. But hey, in this age, at this time, with Donald Trump, all things sometimes are new, and all things are unprecedented.
Now, you're right. I do want to get to the week of legal battles for the former president, but you brought up polls. So let's do that first. Talking about the polls, you know, state by state, obviously, we can look at the general election poll, but what matters are those important battleground states. And where do these battleground states differ today than where they were 4 years ago? Was Trump leading when he was president 4 years ago in these states, or do these polls look different than they did May of 2020?
It's a mixed bag, and the polls were up and down in 2020, and it depended on which poll you were looking at. And many of them at this time 4 years ago were within the margin of error, which means that one candidate might have a percentage point or two advantage on the other candidate on paper, but because of the statistical modeling of how polls work and the scientific quantitative nature of them, it means that it's pretty much a dead heat. And that's kind of where we're at right now in 2024. Donald Trump seems to be doing a little bit better, a shade better than Joe Biden.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans, coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town, a dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
In any of these polls, but many of them remain within that statistical margin of error, which means that basically if you ran another poll right away on the heels of the other one, the result could be a little bit different, and maybe Joe Biden would be up by a percentage point or two. So again, I can't emphasize enough, polls are a snapshot in time. They do not predict what is going to happen in November, but they do test the temperature of where people are at right now. And there's no way you can be in Joe Biden's camp and be feeling good about these numbers right now, because Joe Biden nationally, not very popular as president, and in these swing states is not doing really well, or where he would hope he would be as an incumbent president running for re-election against somebody who's facing 88 criminal charges across 4 felony criminal trials, and he's losing in some of these states that he must win if he's going to win the presidency and a second term. So there's a lot of work for Joe Biden to do if he's going to turn this around in a way that gets him past the all-important number, which is 270, and that's the number of electoral votes, of course, that he will have to win on Election Day or thereafter to win the presidency again and get that second term.
Now let's go to the Big Apple, New York City, where the former president is on trial. And this week we heard from Michael Cohen. And I believe the prosecution also rests its case this week, Dave?
Quite possibly. A lot of action in New York State's second most important city, down in Manhattan. And I'll tell you, Joe, this has been, again, I feel like I say this every time we talk, but unlike anything we've ever seen before. Donald Trump, of course, has not taken the stand himself. It remains to be seen whether he will do that. But this trial is closer to its end in all likelihood than it is its beginning. So the defense, whether they call witnesses, and if they do, how many, that is unclear right now. But it's quite possible that the defense, once they have an opportunity to go and run their playbook, that it's not going to be nearly as thick as the playbook that the prosecution has run with the various witnesses that it has brought to the stand, including Michael Cohen, Donald Trump's former lawyer and fixer, who had some very dramatic testimony, and obviously Stormy Daniels, the former adult film actress, who had some of the most riveting testimony of all during this trial. But you know, we're getting to the end game here in the sense that the jury is going to have before it the question of, did Donald Trump not only falsify business records in a felony criminal way, but did he do so, if he did falsify those records, in a way that was knowing and willfully violating other laws? Okay, so that's kind of the two-step process that they're going to consider. And what would be those laws that Donald Trump would have violated if he did, in the estimation of the jury, a unanimous estimation, I should note, falsify those business records? Well, what they would be federal and state-level campaign finance and election law violations. So they're going to have a big task before them, and it's very unlikely, I think, that this is going to be one of those, oh, they deliberate for a couple of hours, and then they're back again. There's a ton of detail. There's a ton of legality that they're going to have to wade through, and they're going to likely have some orders from the judges to be very meticulous and careful about that as they deliberate. So that could be a days-long process, and I think most people who are watching this trial, including our reporter at Raw Story who's in the courtroom, seem to think that it's likely going to be a longer process than a shorter process once we get to that point of jury deliberations.
All right, Dave, you guys have someone in the courtroom, because here's the thing. So Michael Cohen testimony this week, and it's interesting to me when Fox and CNN have a similar headline. Fox and CNN both, I'll give you the CNN headline. Michael Cohen gives Donald Trump his best day in hush money trial. On the same day, NBC News says that the jury all shifted when Michael Cohen connected the testimony in Trump hush money trial. So was Michael Cohen's, from what you're hearing, Michael Cohen's testimony damaging to the former president, damaging to the prosecution, or a little bit of both?
I think, I don't want to cop out here, but it was a little bit of both. He said some things that seemed to very much help the prosecution, and said some things that seemed to help the defense. And this is all, you have to take this all in the context of Michael Cohen is a liar. Okay? We know that. He has been proven. He has gone to prison. He has done things in his past that are in disrepute. And as a result, having a witness like that is inherently risky because the jury maybe taking that into consideration in their own minds that, hey, this guy has not always told the truth all the time, and what we getting from him, is it on the up and up? Is it truthful? Is it really the straight dope? So as a result, having a witness like that could almost right out of the gate cut both ways. But yeah, I agree with you that it is not surprising that Michael Cohen would be a mixed bag in the situation that he was in testifying against Donald Trump.
Now, also happening this week, Dave, does this just show us where we are in politics? Because this week we had, I believe it was at a committee meeting, Marjorie Taylor Greene and AOC, two of the most known names in Congress. You don't have to know Congress at all to know Marjorie Taylor Greene and AOC. They had an interesting back and forth, and it surprised almost nobody.
And it should surprise nobody. Not every day that you have a fight in a congressional committee hearing over whether a member of Congress is wearing fake eyelashes. But yes, that's exactly where we're at in politics these days, Joe. And that's what happened when Marjorie Taylor Greene basically suggested that Jasmine Crockett, a Democratic congresswoman, couldn't see what was going on because of her fake eyelashes. And that spiraled off into this whole hullabaloo for about an hour in an oversight committee hearing, which just turned into a melee. And it involved all sorts of names that we definitely know and hear lots of. You mentioned two of them: Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Ana Paulina Luna, the congresswoman from Florida, Republican, who's made a name for herself too. All really fighting Jamie Raskin, the Democrat. I mean, it was a scene in a place where we are so accustomed to seeing scenes. But it also too caused Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, who of course is no big friend of Marjorie Taylor Greene these days, after Marjorie Taylor Greene tried to kick him out of his speaker's slot. He basically said this is inappropriate and we need house decorum and we need to go back to sort of a more sensible type of situation up on Capitol Hill. Well, good luck. I mean, Capitol Hill these days is as chaotic as I think we've ever seen it. Our Raw Story congressional correspondent, Matt Laszlo, I talk to him every day and he's just, it's bonkers. And he talks to all of these representatives on the D side, the R side, everyone in between. And he senses, I think, a palpable hatred may be too strong, but where both sides just oftentimes have little or no ability to work with one another. There are exceptions to that rule. We have even seen bipartisan legislation of certain sorts. We saw with Mike Johnson, Democrats and Republicans actually working together in a very, very strange way to save his speakership. So Marjorie Taylor Greene, I think the latest with her is that she's become an enemy in her own party, at least in certain corners, and has revealed a bit of a division within the Republican Party, at least on the U.S. House side of Congress, where there's this ongoing question as to, well, what should the Republican Party be? Should the Speaker of the House be somebody different than Mike Johnson? Should we have yet another speaker, the third in one congressional session? And on and on and on. So it's not just all Republicans and Democrats fighting against each other. Sometimes it's Democrats fighting Democrats and Republicans fighting Republicans. So just this swirl of chaos that seems to be unbridled, and also too is going to result almost certainly in no legislation or action of any meaningful sort between now and the end because of that chaos, but also too coupled with the fact that we're going into an election season when historically not a whole lot happens up on Capitol Hill anyway.
An election season where here in New York State, again, you'll have to look to make sure you know your district because they're changing again. Dave, primary season pretty much done for the presidency, but do we have any big primaries coming up where maybe a notable name of Congress or Senate is being primaried?
Well, we do. And in fact, I would point to one that's happening on Tuesday, which is down in Georgia. Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to have her primary. Now, she's going to win her Republican Party easily, but there's a Democratic primary, too, with four Democrats running to vie in the general election against her. We actually sent one of our correspondents, Alexandria Jacobson, down to Georgia. She spent a week down there in Marjorie Taylor Greene's district. She had a great story up on Raw Story recently that talked to Republicans and Democrats and interviewed, in fact, all four of the Democrats who are fighting in this primary to become that standard bearer for the Democratic Party against Marjorie Taylor Greene. And as crazy as it sounds, they actually think that the winner will have a chance because Marjorie Taylor Greene is not as well liked in her district as she used to be. And, you know, we got some grumbling in the district from Republicans about Marjorie Taylor Greene not showing up in her district enough, not paying attention to her district, trying to just care about national issues and build her profile. And they're like, well, wait, she represents the northwest corner of Georgia, and we need her there too. One interesting fact in the story is that Marjorie Taylor Greene doesn't actually have a actual district office in her district. We went to her district office. You know what it is? It's a post office box, Joe. So there's that element too. So, you know, she's going to almost certainly win re-election. This is a very, very red district. But at the same time, too, this primary kind of highlights the fact that there are some Republicans who wish, at least in Marjorie Taylor Greene's own district, that she would be a little bit more about where the place she represents as opposed to the national level seeking a national profile.
David, in a situation like that, in a district like that, are we talking about, in that Democratic primary, more moderate Democrats trying to run to go up against Marjorie Taylor Greene? Is that how it works in something like that?
Across the board, and many of them are the same on the same on similar issues. But we talked to one of the candidates who's running who said, look, split your vote. If you like Donald Trump, go ahead and vote for Donald Trump. Don't even vote for Joe Biden, but vote for me as a Democrat. Not because I'm a Democrat, but because I'm a better option than Marjorie Taylor Greene, and I will do more to represent the district, represent the locality, than the current member of Congress. So that was sort of an interesting and novel case to make, coming from a Democrat who basically said, give the voters free license to split their ticket, to vote Donald Trump for president and vote for me, the Democrat, in the congressional race. Probably not a case that that particular candidate is going to be successful in, but I think it does show sort of the level of discourse that's happening in a district like that. And also, we'll be curious to see if other candidates are making that case. We must remember, as much as we focus, Joe, on the presidential race, that the House and the Senate, just a couple of seats separate one party from having a majority over the other, and it's going to be incredibly tight, and that's going to be a huge storyline. I mean, it's entirely plausible that the Democrats could have the White House and the House and the Senate, or the Republicans come next year could have the White House and the House and the Senate, or there's going to be some combination in between the two parties. So we really don't know, and every single one of those House races and Senate races is going to be meaningful because it's going to ultimately add up to one party being in power or one party being in the minority.
I think it'll be, at the end of the day, Dave, I think it'll still be a split. How it's split, don't ask me. I'm not going to say that. But I think there will be some kind of split still in Washington next year. Might not be the same split as we have today. But that's just my thought going forward. But we'll have to watch it play out. Dave, before I let you go, Bill's schedule came out. I know one game you're definitely going to. Anything else in that schedule stick out to you?
Yeah, I already have tickets to the game in Baltimore. That's for sure. I mean, we all knew the teams that we were going to be playing. It's going to be a tough schedule. There's no question about that. But hey, you know, you gotta beat the best to be the best. To quote Ric Flair. But you know, I think it's an exciting season. The home opener against Arizona will be hopefully a nice big win to start our season off right. May or may not have tickets to that one as well. But yeah, really looking forward to the season and spending some very, very good quality time with my beloved Buffalo Bills, as I suspect lots of your listeners are.
David, Dave, I know you like to go back and check out the JWA Wireless Dome. You know, the first weekend in November, my beloved Hokies are at Syracuse. The very next day, the Bills are home against Miami. Talk about a fun weekend.
Talk about a fun weekend. That may be a little bit ambitious for me to get to both of those games, but, hope springs eternal, even in the midst of an election season.
Hey, Dave, always great talking with you. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, and we'll listen for you Tuesday morning at 6:50.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it, too. Thanks, Joe.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.